Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of The Crime Hour. Before I start today, I want to say welcome to all the new listeners out there. And thank you for all of my supporters who's been with me throughout this journey. I just want to say I finally made an Instagram page for The Crime Hour. So yes, you can search me up, The Crime Hour, and you'll find it. Follow, share, support. I will be posting all the episodes that I cover on there. So if you think that you're missing an episode or anything like that, you want to go back and see the other, like, you know, clips of other episodes and stuff like that, they're all there. I am now on iHeartRadio. So if you are an iHeartRadio fan, you can search me up on there if that's the app you use for all your listening podcasts, music, or whatever. But I am still on Apple and Spotify and any other podcasts that you can think of. And yeah, thank you. So today we are talking about Velma Barfield. Margie Velma Bellard. My God. Why is it that her maiden last name and her other last name is kind of similar? Ugh. Anyways, was born on October 29th, 1932 in South Carolina. Her family was quite poor, and her father, Murphy, was a tobacco farmer internationally. And he, although, you know, he worked on the farm, as one do when you're kind of poor and stuff like that. And back then, 1932, I don't know what other jobs. I mean, not other jobs, but like, I'm not really sure what they have out there, okay? In North Carolina back then. When I think of Carolina, I think of beaches. He was physically abusive to Velma and her 8 siblings. Holy shit, 8 siblings. Oh my God. I have a brother and a sister, and sometimes, oh my, I think that's it. that's a big family. Her mother, Lillian, never really intervened when the father was being abusive. She just kind of sat back and watched, which is really sad because it's like, come on, you're the other parent. You could say something. But I guess she was afraid, too, that, you know, she intervened that she would probably get beat. I don't know. Not really sure about that. I, for one, don't believe in beatings, and obviously abuse is a no-no. So, yeah, that was life at home for Margie. Now, Margie referred to herself as Velma. She liked using her middle name, and that's totally fine. You know, there's lots of people out there who do that. And you know what? I guess maybe she didn't like the name Margie. I don't know. So, as a kid, she never knew that she was actually poor, right? And she didn't think anything of it, of her father being abusive and stuff. As a kid growing up, she thought that was normal until she started going to school. And when she went to school, she compared herself to other kids, and they're like, oh, they have nicer clothes. They have clothes that don't have rips. They don't have hand-me-downs, you know? And then she compared herself, like, her life to their life. And they're like, okay, my life is not normal. That's not supposed to be a loving family. You know, my parents should not be abusive. So she had an idea. And what she did was, she decided to steal money so that she could buy herself new clothes and other items that the other kids had, so she didn't feel so alone or like left out. I don't know if bullying was popular or, okay, I shouldn't say popular, but like was a thing back then, right? Because like I know depending on, I guess, the generation, bullying was a big thing. I know growing up in elementary school, you know, I'm a 90s kid. So, like, you know, like, born in 1994, bullying was a thing. So I don't know if it happened back then, 1930s, I don't know. So she would rummage through all of her father's pants at home, right? Like trying to find loose change, you know, I guess right before laundry day and stuff like that. And she ends up stealing $80 from a neighbor. Unfortunately, the neighbor saw her, and so she was caught and confronted her about it, but then went and told Murphy, her father. Well, that didn't end up good because then Murphy beat the shit out of her. And that was a way of discipline, I guess. And from then on, Velma never stole again. And yeah, I would say that's a form of discipline. I mean, like, not the abusive part, but I don't know. Just to get the point across, I guess. I know back then, I don't know. In high school, Velma started dating a young man named Thomas, and they were high school sweethearts. And by the time they were 17, they decided to drop out of high school together and they got married. The couple got married in 1951, and they welcomed their first son named Ronald Burke. And 3 years later, in 1954, in September, they welcomed a daughter who they named Kimmy. Or Kim. Now, Velma was very present in her kid's life. She didn't want to be like her parents. And I know there are a lot of parents out there, who, not that they don't try. Everybody has a busy life, right? Like, it really depends on your work, what you do, your schedule, etc. But Velma dedicated her life basically to her children and school. So she would take part in all the parent councils, bake sales, whatever it is, she would participate in because she didn't want to end up like her parents, where they weren't involved and, you know, I guess it made her feel left out that all the other kids' parents were, you know, baking, you know, lemon squares or, you know, participating in all these things like field trips or whatever, and her parents didn't want to do that because her dad worked on a farm. They were poor, they didn't have that luxury, I guess. I mean, I could say my dad never volunteered for any of the school trips, but again, depends on your lifestyle. Velma started working for a textile manufacturing company in 1964. So by then, her kids are a lot more grown. So I guess she was like, okay, now I don't really, you know, have to worry much. But due to complications, I guess, at work, she had to have a hysterectomy. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Oh my God. I'm so sorry, I'm not good with pronouncing big words. God, I can't even read. But this is why you're here, right? You like the bloopers and me messing up and just having a laugh at it. And I do this because a lot of these cases are really hard to listen to. So, I mean, I don't mispronounce things on purpose, I just can't read for the life of me, or spell. But this is why we have autocorrect. But a lot of the reasons why I kind of leave my mistakes in and I don't really edit out this whole podcast is because a lot of these cases are really, really hard to listen to. And I figured if I just leave in my mistakes, because everybody makes mistakes, okay? It's a little easier for somebody to listen because then you have a little moment of where you can laugh at, you know, the host messing up. See? Messing up. And it kind of eases, you know, I guess, not the, I guess the pain, the emotional pain of listening to this. And yeah, that's just really why I do it. Because, man, the Night Stalker, podcast, I messed up so much. I know. And I know in the future, all these other cases, I'm going to mess up. Because, like I said, I can't read for the life of me. Anyways, going back to this. So she had a hysterectomy. I think I said it properly that time. I could still be saying it wrong. I don't know. Due to complications, and the surgery caused severe back pain, and it led to depression, which usually, or not usually, I shouldn't say that, which happens if you're on bed rest a lot and you're in pain, you can't do anything, right? So she got prescribed painkillers for her back pain, but unfortunately, Velma ended up abusing her medication. So a year after her surgery, Thomas got into a really bad car accident, leading him to having a bad concussion and severe migraines. Thomas turned to medication and alcohol to for comfort, to ease the pain, which is not a good idea. Don't mix alcohol and medication. You're in a really bad place if you do that. Because I can guarantee you it doesn't really go well, even if you're just doing it, like having a drink casually. Don't do it if you're taking medication. Then again, I'm not a doctor, so don't take my word for it. I'm just saying it doesn't sound great to me. So because of this, and this led to the couple always fighting because, you know, Velma's abusing her medication and Thomas is trying to, like, you know, he's going for medication and alcohol, right? Just to ease the pain. And then Thomas starts drinking more heavily due to the fights, and Velma just abuses her medication some more. April 1969, they get into a really bad argument, which then led Velma to be like, okay, I'm done. I'm not doing this relationship anymore. I'm over it. I don't want to talk about it anymore. And she packs her bag. She fills one bag or two bags of whatever she could, clothes, whatever, took the kids and left. And Thomas went straight for alcohol, right? Like, that was his turning point. He was like, okay, she left. My comfort after our argument is I'm just going to go and drink. And it was normal for him to drink, but because he started drinking heavily, it started to become normal that he would drink until he passed the fuck out. That's not good. Don't do that. So Velma packs her bags, takes the kids, and she decides to go back to her parents' place. And that night, once Thomas passed out on the floor, the house caught on fire. Yikes. And unclear of what happened, there wasn't much, when I was like doing my research, there's not much written about how it happened. But Thomas ends up passing away because, oddly enough, the fire happened only in the room that he was in, which is, I find really weird because if it's a house fire, usually it spreads. And he had alcohol around, so I don't know how that really happens, how it only is in one room. I'm not really sure. Maybe there was a door, and I'm not really sure, right? I'm not a firefighter. I don't understand these things. I just know that, to me, it sounds really sus, because why is it only one room? And when Velma hears this news, she was really upset about it, because although, you know, she said she was done and everything, and it was the same night that she left, right? And she's still married to this guy, right? This is her high school sweetheart, right? Like, I would be heartbroken if the love of my life, you know, hearing that. Yeah. And so she was really upset, but she decided, if it was only that one room and the house was able, like, they were able to fix it up, she was gonna still live there because that's still, it's still her house, right? And so she moves back in with the kids because, honestly, she didn't want to live with her parents. And if I were her, I wouldn't either. If her parents or her dad was abusive, no, I would not, because I wouldn't want to put my child or children through that. So good on her for moving back. But this time, when she moved back, Velma made sure to get the house insured so that, I guess, if anything happens, you know, insurance will cover it. Well, a few months after moving back in, the house catches fire again. I don't know how it happened. They're not sure. But unfortunately, this time, the house could not be saved. So, again, Velma and the kids go back to her parents' house. And while, because they were waiting for the insurance to pay out so that they could use that money towards a new place. Now, during this time, it hasn't even been a full year since Thomas has passed away, and Velma is already seeing somebody new. And, I get it. Everybody, you know, deals with grief differently. Everybody moves on at whatever pace they move on. But honestly, I don't think I could do it. Like, I don't think I could ever, honestly. Imagine marrying the love of your life, having kids, and all of that happen. I would not. I could not just move on like that. Like, it breaks my heart. Like, I would be depressed. So, Velma meets this guy named Jennings Barfield. And they met at a church group. And after some time, the two ended up getting married. And she changed her last name to Velma Barfield. That's how she got it, okay? So, of course, they're married. Velma moves in with him with the kids. And Jennings was 16 years older. He had diabetes, had emphysema. Oh, my God. Emphysema. I think that's how you say it. Oh, my God. And heart disease. And during this whole time, Velma is still abusing her medication. Which is really a problem, because at this point she's an addict, right? And she needed to get help. And so this caused a lot of problems in their marriage, because they would always fight and, you know, which led her to just take more meds, right? And the talk of divorce ended up coming up. But before they could finalize anything, Jennings died of a heart complication in 1971. So, is it just me? This woman has a lot of bad luck. Like, her house burned twice. Then her husband dies, like, her first husband. Now her second husband has died. Man, if that's not bad luck, I don't know. And she didn't have a good childhood either, so. So, again, Velma and the kids move back in with her parents, okay, at first, and because I guess she was dealing with the grief and all of that, and obviously she needs somebody to care for her children, because, you know, I guess time of grief, and if you're abusing your medication, you're not all there. At least, that's what I was gonna, that's how I would think of it. You're not all there. If you're abusing your medication, obviously there's going to be side effects and stuff like that. And you know, your husband just died again. So yeah, I don't think she was all there. But then she decided that the kids and her will stay in the house that she had with Jennings. So by 39 years old, Velma had been a widow twice. And by this time, Ronald was off to join the military. Her son, yeah. And not long after, Velma gets the news that her father had been diagnosed with lung cancer. And although he was abusive, still her father. So, this time, the house that she had with Jennings caught on fire. And so this is the third house. This girl's, like, I don't know. Like, what are you doing? Are you not watching the stove? Probably not if you're abusing your medication. You're so out of it, probably. I don't know. Again, it never said what caused the fire. And again, it was unlivable, so she had to move back in with her parents. Not even a week has gone by since she found out that her father was diagnosed with lung cancer. Like a couple days, like 2 or 3 days since she moved in, her father ended up passing. So man, if somebody was to say she's got bad luck, I don't even think that's the gist of it anymore. Like, I don't even think that even sums up how her life is. And Velma never got along with Lillian, her mother. And it was all because Lillian didn't like the fact that Velma was addicted to her medication. Which, you know what? That's a valid point. That is a valid reason why you would not get along. Because as a mother or somebody of who cares for the person, you know, they would want to try and get them help. And this caused them to argue a lot. And so Lillian just didn't like the person that Velma had become, right? Like, you know, the way she saw it, like, you know, that's not the daughter she raised. The summer of 1974, Lillian was hospitalized with severe stomach pains. And doctors could never figure out why and what caused the pain. And they just did ongoing testing after testing, hoping to find a diagnosis. Unfortunately, nothing came up of it. And during this time, Velma starts seeing somebody new again. And she makes plans to move in with him. But unfortunately, he died in a car accident. Okay. Wow. Man. She's got a lot going on. She's in a lot of grief. It's like one after the other. So, after Lillian is released from the hospital as she was doing better. But December of 1974, Lillian's illness takes a turn and she becomes really sick. And again, she's sent to the hospital. But about 2 hours after she was admitted, Lillian passed away. Oh boy. Man, Velma, I don't know. Shortly after her mom's passing, Velma was arrested for writing several forged checks under Jennings' name. Which, would it still be forged if... I mean, they were married, like, yeah, she's a widow, but technically they were still married, right? I don't know how it works. Anyways, it was under his name, his money, and she tried to cash it in. And when the police arrested her, Velma had a complete mental breakdown. And they were like, okay, we cannot take her in like this. We cannot send her to jail like that. I think we need to get her help. So they admit her to a mental hospital. At least that's how they put it back then. I know that's not how you call it nowadays, you know. To get some psychiatric help. And they said that she would not be going to jail until the doctors there gave them the okay that she was, you know, doing better. So once the hospital gave them the okay, they took her to jail and Velma ended up receiving 6 months jail time, but only served 4 because of good behavior. Wow. Only 6 months for forged checks. That's not how it is now. Then again, I'm in Canada. I don't think that's how it was anyways. Even back then. Who knows? Anyways, be smart. Don't do dumb shit. In 1976, Velma got a job as a home care nurse for an elderly couple. 93-year-old Montgomery Edwards and his wife, who was 84, oh my dear God. Oh, okay. You see, like I said, I cannot read for the life of me, and I'm the one who typed this out, okay? I should memorize it by now, because I looked over the cases, you know, everything. But anyways, she was 84 years old, okay, and her name was Dolly. So, Velma's duties were obviously to take care of them. You know, like help them with whatever they needed, like bathe, like, you know, like cooking, cleaning, whatever. So a year later, in January of 1977, Montgomery dies. A few years... oh my god, holy shit. Scratch that. A few weeks later, in February, Dolly died. Both of them developed a weird stomach virus. Huh. Interesting. Remember how her mom died? Interesting. Velma was then reassigned to another elderly couple, John Henry and his wife, Record Lee. Now, Record needed assistance because she had a broken leg, but John needed more help because he was older, so he needed the extra help around the house and stuff. Makes sense. June 4th, 1977, John went to get the hospital with severe stomach pains. The doctors diagnosed him with a stomach virus, and not long after, he died. So, do you see a pattern going on here? It's like wherever Velma is, somebody unfortunately passes. Rest in peace to all these people that's in this documentary. Why did I say documentary? Podcast? Case. Okay? Whatever happened to them. Rest in peace. Yeah, it just seems like whoever she was around just, you know, they didn't have a good chance. Now, to Velma's relatives and friends, they just thought, wow, she's very unlucky. Like I said, everywhere she went, whoever she started seeing or whatever, you know, they didn't get the good end of the stick. So Velma starts dating another guy named Stuart Taylor, who she met in church. So the same way she met Jenning. And she started to move into his place in 1977. And during the move, Stuart comes across letters addressed to Velma for when she was in prison. This alarms him and it gives him second thoughts of moving in with her because she didn't tell him that she was in prison. And he's probably like, holy shit, I'm moving in with a criminal or whatever the case may be. But the two decided to continue their relationship and she moves in. And time goes on and Stuart starts to notice that some of his checks and his checkbook are missing, and he confronted her about it, and he then finds out that she's been forging checks under his name, and of course this caused an argument because why wouldn't it, right? Because that's not right, and you know, you should always talk to your partner. Communication is key, people. Communication. So that night they were at church and Stuart starts to get stomach pains and nausea. And, you know, he looks over at Velma and he tells her, listen, I'm not feeling great. And she goes, okay, should we leave? So the couple decides to leave. But when they get home, Stuart starts feeling worse. They head to the hospital and Velma calls his family to inform them of what's happening. And they all come down to the hospital. And basically, by the time they got there, it's really sad to say, it's kind of like he waited for his family to be there, but once they got there, he passed. So, obviously, this is really weird, I feel like the doctors should look at Velma and be like, okay, this is really sus, how come every person that she's been with has a stomach virus, or, you know, something's going on, right? And they can't diagnose it, so, like, what's happening? I don't know. I think by now you should recognize who she is if she's going to the hospital so many times with different people. I don't know. Police then get a call from someone claiming to be Velma's sister. So remember, she has 8 siblings, okay? So one of her sisters tipped them off saying that Velma killed Stuart the same way she killed Lillian, their mother. And although police listened to the tip, nothing was done about it, and they didn't take it seriously because they're like, oh, come on. What could, even the doctors couldn't figure out what's happening. I don't think this is serious, right? Like, the doctors even said it was a stomach virus. So, you know, they kind of, like, brushed it off. But then Stuart's family decided that they wanted an autopsy. Now, remember, she didn't marry Stuart yet. They were just in a relationship, so she had no say. She was not, you know, the spouse yet. So the family got an autopsy, and just to find out what happened, you know, and why. Like, why did he die? He was healthy. And in this report, they see that he died because he had a lethal amount of arsenic in his system. How did that get there? Now the police start to take this tip more seriously, and they bring Velma in for questioning. And she denies having any part of it. She's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, do I look like somebody who would carry arsenic around? Like, come on, this is my partner, right? Like, I would never do that. Are you crazy? And even the doctor saying that, you know, he had a stomach virus, so I don't know what you're talking about. First off, I want to say something before I continue. One, why do these people always lie to the police? Like, what does that do? Like, how does that help you in any way? Like, what? Just so that you can stall them for, like, 2 minutes? Like, they're gonna find out the truth anyway, so what was the point of you lying? Like, you lying just, you know, you're just digging yourself a bigger hole, right? Like, they're gonna find out it's you anyways. I just don't understand all these cases, and, like, when I hear certain, like, cases and crimes, like, I watched the first 48, and I'm like, why are these people lying? What is the point of that? Like, they're the police, or the FBI, or whatever. They're not stupid. They're gonna find it. If you left DNA somewhere, that's it. You're done. You have witness, you're screwed, right? Point in case, don't do anything stupid, people. So at this point, Velma has her son Ronald there at the station, okay? And he asked her, oh, Mom, did you have anything to do with it? And Velma didn't want to lie to her son, so she confessed to the murder of Stuart. She claims that she just wanted to make him feel sick and not kill him. She didn't think it was going to kill him. And that she just put the arsenic in his drink. So Velma was taken to the psych ward of the prison, and she often threatened to suicide. Then she accepts the fact that she is in prison. Like, hello, lady. And, you know, while in prison, Velma starts to read a lot, especially the Bible. And then she comes forward saying that she's found God, she's a new person, yada, yada, yada. You know, the same thing that every criminal or whatever say whenever they read the Bible or whatever they're given in prison. I don't know. So, November 23rd, 1978, Velma's trial begins in North Carolina for the first-degree murder of Stuart Taylor. She then also admits to poisoning her mother, the two other people that she took care of, right? John and Record, because they had stomach viruses. Not the first elderly couple, because they already had health complications, so it wasn't them. Or maybe I'm mixing it up. Oh, what? You know, you get the gist of it. And that, and then she says that, she didn't kill Thomas or Jennings. I mean, Thomas died in the fire, Jenning died of a heart complication. So November 30th, 1978, a week after her first trial, Velma was found guilty of murder and was given the death sentence. She was taken to the Correctional Center for Women in North Carolina and placed on death row. So, Velma's original execution date was February 3rd, 1979. But she received a stay of execution, which went on for years. So, this basically means that you were allowed to fight your execution. And you are allowed to fight it. You go to court. You know, you do whatever you do in court. I don't know. With the judge. I'm not really sure. You just fight for it, right? And then you get put on hold. Where, you know, they put your case on hold and see what happens before they actually execute you. Or whatever it is that you're trying to fight for. And then it goes to the Supreme Court. And there you get put on hold again. And once you get to the Supreme Court and you're put on hold for years. So she's in this prison. And people in this prison refer to Velma as Mama Margie. Because she was a lot older than a lot of them. And she was also considered a mentor to many of the young inmates. I don't know if she's a great mentor. I don't think you want to take any advice from her. November 1st, 1984, a day before her execution, Velma wrote letters to each of her victims' families, and in the letter she apologizes and asks for forgiveness. She passed off the letters to a member of her church to deliver, and the families refused the apologies and they wanted nothing to do with her. And that makes a lot of sense. I mean, like, you did kill somebody in their family, so, you know, I wouldn't want anything to do with you either. Velma's last meal was a bag of cheese doodles, which is like Cheetos, and two bottles of Coke. That's kind of a sad meal. But I guess if that's your favorite thing. November 2nd, 1984, Margie Velma Barfield was executed by lethal injection. She was 52 years old and was the first woman to be executed in the United States since 1962. Velma requested to be buried next to her first husband, Thomas. And that is the case of Velma Barfield. What do you think? Was it a string of bad luck? Or you think she just had this, I don't know, evil anger built inside her instead of, you know, actually physically murdering these people? She just put arsenic in their drinks. What do you think? I think it's a little bit of both. I think she had anger in her from, you know, like her childhood, from being abused and stuff like that. And maybe she just wanted to take her anger out somehow. She didn't know how, and this was her way of, you know, getting her anger out. I don't know. I'm not really sure. But also, I feel like her childhood did play a big part in this, because she was abused, and her mom didn't help her, you know? I don't know. And she's definitely, man, her luck. Even if it wasn't for the arsenic, man, her house burned down 3 times, and she lost more than one partner. I don't know. But anyways, this is just a case of Margie Velma Barfield. Until next time, bye!